From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, June 29th, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Modern Pest Services, committed to offering eco-friendly pest control solutions. Learn more at modernpest.com.
There has been an increase since yesterday of 28 cases of COVID-19 in Maine. 3,219 people have now had COVID-19 here, and one more person has died for a total of 105 deaths. 2,623 people in Maine have recovered. As the strike at Bath Iron Works enters its second week, negotiations have yet to resume between the company and its largest union. The strike, the first in 20 years at BIW, comes after members of the union Local S6 rejected a contract offer that they say would threaten the seniority rights of longtime workers and continue to allow subcontractors into the shipyard. The company said those subcontractors are necessary and would only be brought in to, quote, overcome manning shortages, lack of equipment or facilities. Union spokesperson Tim Suter says since the strike began last Monday, Local S6 has exchanged correspondence with BIW, but he says the company has yet to reconsider its positions on the subcontracting and seniority issues.
We've proposed multiple ways to get around the issues at the shipyard. Those just fall on deaf ears.
Suter says he's hoping a recent correspondence between BIW parent company General Dynamics and the president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers can bring the sides closer to an agreement. BIW did not offer comment today, but in a statement last week said federal mediation assistance remained a possibility. Cumberland County Superior Court judge today ruled that a citizens' initiative aimed at killing Central Maine Power's power line project can stay on the November ballot. CMP had argued that the item would violate the constitutional separation of powers by undoing a permit issued by executive branch regulators. Justice Thomas Warren says that argument is a significant issue that may have merit, but that the courts should not weigh in until after voters have had their say. Warren cites case law that tends to favor democratic processes that aid citizen authority, as well as precedent indicating the legislature can undo decisions by utility regulators. His ruling is expected to be appealed to the Supreme Judicial Court. You can view the decision on our website, mainepublic.org. In weather tonight, showers or occasional rain with areas of fog and lows in the mid-50s to low 60s. Tomorrow, showers and isolated thunder, muggy with highs in the high 60s to the mid-70s. As we approach the 4th of July weekend, the state's already seeing an influx of visitors, and Governor Janet Mills says she wants them all to know the guidelines they must follow in order to limit the spread of COVID-19. As Mills told Maine Calling's Jennifer Rooks today, visitors from states other than Vermont and New Hampshire have a responsibility to either be tested before or shortly after they get here, or quarantine for 2 weeks upon arrival. And she says if a surge in cases happens this summer, the state could choose to reimpose restrictions on certain activities.
Resetting the restrictions is one of the potential acts. Licensing is another potential avenue of remedying a situation. If a particular activity or particular entity is not complying with the checklist, we can move to take their license if they have a business license in Maine or in the city, town where they operate. But we're looking for first and foremost for voluntary compliance.
Let me ask you about this. We are in the middle of what is traditionally Maine's tourism season. We're
right.
Hearing from people that there doesn't seem to be enforcement. There doesn't seem to be a lot of people following the rules. A friend of mine said, drove back to New Hampshire and back this morning, only saw two signs. One was kind of obscured, so the rules aren't really boldly out there, easy to read. Others, another friend in Booth Bay Harbor this past weekend, lots and lots of out-of-state plates. How can Maine people feel confident that those people with the out-of-state plates came in with a negative COVID test or have been quarantining?
I think we're trying to get the word out far and wide. We'll do the best we can. And frankly, there is only so much we can do, but I think the public in general knows what the rules are. We've tried to keep them fairly simple, unlike some other states where you're dictating restrictions based on the county that you come from and the varying and changing, ever-changing positivity rates of that particular county. We just say, hey, look, New Hampshire and Vermont, their caseloads and rates are pretty similar to Maine's. They're not a high-intensity states. But the other states people come from have been really high, high-incidence states, most of them, if not all of them, higher than Maine's. And so we want to make sure that people coming here either quarantine for 14 days once they get here or have a negative test taken within 72 hours before they get here. If for some reason they can't possibly get a test before they get here, then get one when you get here. Testing is increasing day by day, test availability.
I have actually heard anecdotally from several people that they want to do the right thing. They want to get a test either before they come to Maine or right when they come to Maine or because they're traveling in the other direction. And if unless they fib and they tell their doctor that they're feeling symptoms, they're not able to get that test.
Yeah, I've heard that anecdotally as well. Just this morning, somebody emailed me from Farmington and said that Franklin Memorial Hospital wouldn't do a test of this individual, even though they're going to be traveling, and they feel they're in a high-risk category because they're in sales. Well, I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that our standing order that issued a couple of weeks ago applies to people who are at risk, not just because they have symptoms. It's not limited to people who have symptoms. That would almost be too little too late, in a sense. So our standing order and our stand-up of tests and commercial tests across the state of Maine, some of which are federally funded, applies to anyone who, for instance, in the healthcare profession, a first responder, people who are in public-facing positions, that kind of thing, or people who are traveling to and from other states with higher incidence COVID-19 cases. That standing order may be misunderstood, and we'll make sure that it gets understood to be liberally construed, liberally used, and I'm in favor of as much testing as possible. There is a drugstore pharmacy on Forest Avenue that just opened up its testing, and I believe that it is free, and I believe it is open to anybody. There are testing facilities standing up all across the state of Maine every day, and we're going to make sure we get the word out that it should be widely used, and people should be able to get tested easily. I've been talking to the governors of New Hampshire and Vermont. They've got even greater testing capacity, commercial testing capacity. They can't get people to get tested. People don't want to get tested there. Now here in Maine, we're hearing people who want to get tested and can't. I want to make sure we rectify that situation.
That's Maine Governor Janet Mills. She spoke today with Maine Calling's Jennifer Rooks. You can hear the entire conversation tonight at 7 on Maine Public Radio or at mainepublic.org. And tomorrow, after more than three decades on the job, the man who has been the spokesman for the Maine Department of Public Safety heads into retirement. Steve McCausland is the voice that's provided answers for the Maine State Police, the State Fire Marshal's Office, and the Maine Drug Enforcement Agency, often late at night, early in the morning, and on weekends and holidays. And Ms. McCausland told Maine Public's Ed Morin that he had never served in law enforcement, but had worked in the news business when he took the job 32 years ago.
I had experience in all four of the media outlets in the state. Radio, I shot film for Channel 6, so I had some TV background. The wire service, I covered the state for AP during Sundays when they didn't have full-time staffers. And I also covered local news for the Portland Press Herald out of their Brunswick Bureau for a number of years. So I had a little bit of experience in all four of those areas. I knew police because I'd covered them my entire broadcasting career, and I thought, I can do that job.
And talking about that job, what is the job of the public safety spokesperson? I know that you get calls from reporters like me, and you provide answers to questions that we have, but there's more to it than that.
Well, first and foremost, crime in this state makes news, and it's not because people want to sensationalize or they're curious. It's because it affects people's lives in this state, and so it is a big deal, and police agencies, particularly us, needed someone to be able to tell Maine what investigations we were launching, what cases we've solved, and unfortunately the many, many tragedies that have taken place in my tenure here. And it's important because that affects people's lives in the state, and they want to know what happened. And if somebody is responsible for those deaths, they want to know whether those people have been charged.
So I'm wondering, what challenges have you faced being the spokesperson for law enforcement when you yourself aren't a police officer?
Well, I learned quickly of what could be said and what needed to be held back, particularly if it's an ongoing investigation. There are facts and information that I have that helps me talk about the story and what to release properly, but also there's investigative information that needs to be withheld because we're still looking to whoever is responsible for whatever crime we're dealing with. So I learned very quickly that there was a line I had to walk where I would probably not make either side happy, and my goal was to make both sides happy, to give the media at least the essence of what we were dealing with, but not give too much to confuse or disrupt the investigators on the other side of the fence that were trying to find out who's responsible. I think I've walked that line pretty well over 32 years.
So what are some of the most memorable cases that you will remember as you are in your retirement?
The big one will be the disappearance of Ayla Reynolds, the little girl who disappeared nearly 9 years ago from her Waterville home where she was staying with her father. State police have spent thousands and thousands of hours on that case. It's the largest criminal investigation ever launched for state police in Maine history. We will get the answer someday. It's just I won't be there to announce it. But the visual that I'm still stunned that I was there and saw it firsthand was the explosion in Farmington last fall. When I got up to Farmington about 2 hours after it happened, there was still a cloud of dust over that section of the town. One fireman had been killed. Several other firefighters and Larry Lord, the maintenance supervisor, were terribly injured. And it's a miracle anyone got out of that building because it no longer stood. Within a second or two, it disappeared. And that was a stark reality. I've seen many, many scenes in my career at public safety and when I was a working newsman. And that scene, that day, I will remember the rest of my life.
Maine Public Safety spokesman Steve McCausland, who is retiring tomorrow after 32 years on the job. He spoke with Maine Public's Ed Morin. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a conversation about how the pandemic is affecting Maine's agriculture industry. I'm Nora Flaherty.